The Teaching Saints Virtual Summit was an incredible success. We had thousands of individuals tune in from around the world to hear from people like Brad Wilcox, Hank Smith, Casey Griffiths, Marie Eckersley, Jason Hewlett, Jeff Burke, and more as they taught us about how to better stimulate classroom discussion, create effective classroom environments, best practices with object lessons, and so much more. If you missed the summit, be sure to visit leadinglds.org/teach to watch the three most viewed sessions from the online conference. It will not only change you, but it will change those you teach. Check out the Teaching Saints Virtual Summit today. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Leading LDS podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum, and I will be your host. Now, I'm recording this intro, I don't know, on a day where I'm feeling kind of chill, and just need to punch out some of these intros and outros for some upcoming episodes. And man, we got a lot of good ones in the bank here that I hope to get out to you soon. But I feel just a level of gratitude today as I am addressing the Leading LDS audience and want you to know I love you. You're the best. And check out this email I got. I wasn't planning on sharing this, but hey, I produce the podcast. I'll do what I want. No, it's worth sharing. Let me find it here. All right. It says, "Hello, Kurt. My name is Nelma Lima. I live in Angola, Africa. I serve as a District Relief Society president, as a second counselor, and secretary. I do love to hear the content of Leading LDS website. I have not made any contribution yet because it is very hard to get dollars here and I do not have a Visa card. As I travel out of Angola, I will be able to have someone doing that for me. Is it okay? Since it is not fair to use a service without paying. Sincerely, Nelma." Bless your heart, Nelma. Listen, way over there in Angola, Africa, this is the beauty of Leading LDS. We're a nonprofit organization. And sure, yes, we need donations, contributions, people willing to step forward and fund this incredible project. But for you, Nelma, don't even worry about it. We're just happy that you are finding value in the resources at Leading LDS. And I bet you if I took a vote of the entire audience of Leading LDS, they'd have no problem if you continued to access as many resources as possible at no charge. Don't even worry about it. Don't go through the trouble of contributing. With that said, all you other listeners out there, bless your heart, especially those that contribute. If it is easy enough to just take out your wallet, go to a website and punch in some numbers, please contribute. Like, this is incredible. We are reaching District Relief Society presidents, the second counselors and secretaries across the globe with fantastic leadership resources so that they can step forward in confidence and lead. That's why we need your help, folks. So bless your heart, Nelma. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you enjoy this episode as well. Now, for this episode, we interview Sydney Hatch, and we focus around the topic of divorce in the LDS Church. Now, obviously, we have incredible doctrines when it comes to families, when it comes to marriage, especially eternal marriage, eternal families. But many of you know, and I'm sure have witnessed, whether in your own life or the life of a loved one, that sometimes divorce happens. And divorce happens even though you've done everything possible to make sure that divorce won't happen. And you've, you know, gotten married in the temple, participated in ordinances, but sometimes it just does not work out. And Sydney has been doing some incredible work with putting together resources, and she just finished writing a book called When Eternity Is Not Forever, a devotional for the LDS divorced. And she's putting together these resources to reach out to that community of divorcees that are out there that have faced heartbreak, even when they thought before that that their situation would work out. And we have an interesting discussion about divorce, and I want to bring more attention to this topic, because I know leaders face it in their offices, right? The couples coming in and saying, well, we're thinking of divorce or this isn't working out, and just some unique perspectives. But especially when the divorce happens and that individual returns to the church, And I hope that they don't feel stigmas that push them away. I hope they feel welcomed, but sometimes it's awkward, right? We don't want to talk about the big elephant in the room, or we don't want to address their past. Not that we have to address it, but how can we open our arms and welcome them back as if they have just as much value, which they do, of any other member of our board? So here's my interview with Sydney Hatch. Today, I have the opportunity to sit down with Sydney Hatch. How are you, Sydney?
Very great.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to put this together. We're going to talk about some very important topics, topics that apply to your life, maybe more than you ever dreamed that they would apply to your life. But before we get into that, let's put you into context. Where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C. I specifically grew up in Fairfax, Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And how you're in the middle of the political world out there. Is that?
Yeah. It always made things interesting. We'll say that.
Okay, good. And so what's the best part of living in that part of the world, that part of the country?
You know, I loved the diversity of people, you know, especially being a LDS member in a place that was not so predominantly LDS. Mm. I grew up around a lot of different backgrounds and people. And I felt like my life was very much enriched by that experience. And I love it. I mean, I just moved here to Utah. And, you know, although Utah is wonderful, you know, I will always miss Virginia and D.C.
So. Awesome. So pretty traditional upbringing in the church?
Or? Very much so. I was actually born in Provo, Utah, and I was brought back to Virginia when I was very young. But I've been a member my entire life.
Nice.
Yeah.
And how would you describe your faith development maybe through your teen years and into young adulthood?
Yeah. Again, like, you know, being in a Mormon, in a very un-Mormon world, I kind of was able to take my understanding of the gospel and apply it to my diverse crowd of people I grew up with. And so I was able to find positive learning experience from, you know, Hindus and Muslims and Jewish people that were around me, and being able to kind of see a lot of the similarities and the strengths that their faiths bring and, you know, what the LDS faith brings to them as well. And so I really kind of progressed in understanding people, which is really, really important to me. And so, you know, throughout my experience of growing up that way, you know, I was able to really kind of see people as God sees them, and kind of not for the differences, but them as people, and how much God loves each and every single one of them, and trying to make their lives better and, you know, inspiring them to be their best selves. So, you know, I took that experience and then went to BYU, Idaho and got my degree there. And that was kind of a different experience for me, because culture shock of, you know, you're now in a Mormon kind of centered area, and it was definitely a kick in the pants. But, you know, I, again, loved that kind of contrast of being able to have that experience as well.
So that was your first college experience, was BYU, Idaho, right?
Yep.
Did you go on a mission or consider a mission? Or
No, not really. Because I, you know, I feel as though you should live your life as a missionary in any opportunity that you're given. And, you know, I just never thought of a mission. But, you know, I do try my best to find teaching moments in my everyday life, whether that's a very strict lesson of doing visiting teaching, or, you know, teaching someone a small and simple truth and on the street. Like, I've really tried to kind of build people around me.
Yeah. And that sort of leads into, I mean, in that stage of life is when young adults, at least in this church, often get married and look for an eternal spouse and in the eternal location, right? And that plays into your experience and what we're going to talk about today, which is divorce.
Right.
You found somebody married, and I bet you were Twitter-pated and looking forward
to
eternity, just like any Mormon girl, right?
But exactly.
It didn't work out that way as you'd hope.
Maybe
tell us about your story and how that unfolds.
Yeah. Again, I think like any kind of Mormon girl, I had an upbringing where I sang many songs about marriage in the temple. You know, we talked about temple attendance and family and mostly love. And, you know, I had a beautiful and healthy childhood that kind of nurtured me to be a good person and plan for eternal marriage and family. And, you know, I visited the grounds quite frequently. And like any girl, I dreamed of the day that, you know, a covenant and, you know, good, loving man would be kind of my all eternity companion. And everything that I'd known about the temple up until that point was positive and happy. And that dream came true in 2011. And I found my eternal companion. And, you know, I thought things were going to be kind of like what you always sung about. I want to go to the temple. And unfortunately, after 3 years, it became very clear that God had a very different plan for me in my life. And eternity for my marriage would not be forever this time. And I got divorced after 3 years of being married. I got married at a very young age of 20. And, you know, this person was my best friend, and we didn't do the typical, you know, let's get married after 4 months. You know, I knew him for 3 years. And so it was a very calculated and very thought about situation. And unfortunately, it kind of ended in divorce.
So you can't just default to like, okay, I knew him 2 weeks.
No, I can't right? this time. No. Yeah. And, you know, he was a good person. I think he did try his best, but after very long periods of time, it was best for us both, because at the end of the day, the struggles that we had, I was not becoming my best self, and mm-hmm. he was not becoming his best self. And God didn't ultimately die for me to live a mediocre life where I wasn't living up to my potential and being neglected. And so, you know, my life kind of span and spiraled into a place that I never really fathomed. And I wanted so much for my life and my family, and it kind of just shattered before me. And the temple and marriage thing kind of became something that was very sad for me. But it, yeah.
And so was that really your first experience close to divorce? I mean, I assume your parents were married.
They're still kicking strong, right. And, you know, 31, 32 years of marriage. Yeah. And so, I mean, no one in my family had really been divorced. And so this was definitely new for me. It was a new experience.
Mm-hmm. Was there, and I don't know, because divorces, I mean, there's not two divorces that are the same, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's so much emotion,
correct.
Situations. Was it a type of thing that both of you in the relationship mutually saw that this was headed in a direction that was divorce? And I'm sure there was much effort to save it.
Yes. And I will be the first advocate. If you can save it, you save it, right? Yeah. But there were many times where at the end we just said, it's time, you know? And I believe that Heavenly Father was very close to me throughout this entire experience. And there were many times where I was on my knees saying, Heavenly Father, please help me know what I need to do. What's the best thing for me? What's the best thing for us? And, you know, at the end of the day, and after many years of praying and not receiving an answer on what I should do, there was one day that I had peace, and Heavenly Father said, you know what? It's okay. It's okay. And it's time for you to let go. And that was a peaceful feeling.
Yeah. How would you describe, were these 3 years in Idaho at college?
It was 1 year in college, and then the rest of it was in DC. Okay. And so.
Okay. And I would imagine as the marriage starts to go rocky, you're looking for help or yes. someone to, because this is all happening within the walls of your home. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So where do you go from there? I mean, how do you seek out for help, or were you trying to just figure this all out in your own head?
Yeah. I think, you know, like any couple that's probably struggling, because marriage is not perfect, believe it or not, yeah. you will have struggles right. and there will be learning curves, right? You know, I think you try to save things on your own. If you can't go there, you go to the bishop, your church leaders that can be a guidance to you. And then, you know, if that is something that's not necessarily working for you as well, there's other resources like therapy and other marriage counselings that you know, I think that you should take advantage of. And those are very helpful resources for you as well.
So was the bishop or a leader your first place to go?
Yeah, I went to them, and, you know, they tried their best. And yeah. I think like any bishop, you know, you don't get professional training on marriage counseling. Yeah. And, you know, I think that they can be that spiritual reminder of keep Heavenly Father close and to work with him. And I think that that's the most powerful thing a bishop can do, is to keep that reminder that it's not just you two, it's also God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you've put together as we go through this, sort of the framing of our discussion here is three main points. And the first one you put down here is to talk about it. And I think that goes with any issue, whether it's mental illness somebody's dealing yeah. with, whether it's you know, welfare issues, just to start articulating the problem mm-hmm. so that we can, and maybe problem is the wrong word, but the situation, so that we can find resources for it, right?
Right.
So how did, and maybe you learned a lot from your experience,
yes.
or in hindsight, you think, oh, here's some things that should have happened. But so was it just the process of talking about it with a priesthood leader or a Relief Society leader that helped?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we decided to get divorced, and as I was working through that divorce process, I quickly found that my life would be very different than my Relief Society friends. And, you know, and those kind of relationships led to like temple marriages and family and children and homes and, you know, living a life together with a priesthood holder. And, you know, when you become divorced, you quickly find that your life is going to be different. And I found very quickly there were not a lot of resources for people that were going through LDS, which was unfortunate, because why would you, you know I was trying to dig at anything I could find to have some type of spiritual upliftment. And there was no kind of long-term plan for divorce, I found. And everything about what I knew was normal and what I wanted for my daily life changed. And the beginning was kind of reestablishing new norms and understanding and redefining relationships with the church community, you know, and where I kind of, where my place was in the church. Because as a church is a very family centered kind of organization where it's family and marriage, you know, you're kind of not a part of that anymore. And so what does it mean for me after I get divorced? You know, where do my temple covenants mean? You know, how does that work out? Because that's very complex. And, you know, where is my place? And that was kind of hard. And, you know, as I searched out, you know, scriptures and doctrinal books written by highly respected members, and I found LDS literature that related to the, you know, the topic, it was just generally very limited. And I've soon found that there needs to be more discussion about divorce in the church. And so, you know, it does not need to be the dirty D word anymore. Yeah. I feel like it kind of has a very negative stigma that is a little bit of a taboo to talk about. But I think that that's something that we need to avoid, because it doesn't have to be a shunning topic. It actually needs to be talked about in the community, because it's happening more. And I think most of us know someone who is going through a divorce, who has, or, you know, even a family member that has been touched by divorce. And when we kind of avoid and we don't talk about these type of topics, I think it kind of creates the spirit of the quote unquote dented can type of feeling. And that's kind of bothersome to probably some people. And so the negative stigma of divorce is fading. I can really, really be happy. You know, Dieter Eck Uffdorf recently during a YSA conference, you know, specifically mentioned divorced members in his talk with his beautiful wife, Harriet, which I love her. Yeah, she's so spunky. I love it. Yeah. And as well as, you know, there's even policy changes for divorced members, where in previous years, divorced members weren't able to work in, as temple workers. And that has recently changed. And so I think that there are definitely positive things that are happening within the divorce kind of world that I think, you know, the discussions are starting, and I'm very excited about this kind of coming to light.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, that's the stigma there. I don't know if there's ever a good stigma, you know?
No.
So this is an example.
It's a sad thing. Right. Like, you know, and I think a lot of people don't know what to do with it, you know?
Exactly. And so that, therefore, that becomes a stronger stigma, right?
Exactly.
And well, take me back to the, when you first thought, okay, I need to go talk. Was it with the bishop that you first went to? Okay. You thought, okay, we've tried this long enough. I mean, were you trying marriage counseling before that, or was
No. So it was that was our last resort of... Okay.
So what was, when you decided, okay, was it a decision made as a couple that you both go in there with a bishop, or just you, or?
It was mostly me just because of our marriage dynamics, but, you know, and he was a very kind man, and, you know, that he brought a lot of positive change that could have worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what, when you were going in to see the bishop, what was it you were looking for? I think in hindsight, you think, oh, well, this is what I should have been looking for, but in that moment where you didn't even think you'd ever need to process this type of relationship, what were you looking for in that moment?
I think, you know, I think like any marriage that's struggling, I think you're trying to find things to help the situation. You know, are there things that I should be thinking about differently? Are there things that I could be doing to strengthen our marriage? Is there, you know, resources or materials that you think that we should read together as a couple? He had some answers, and then he, you know, but again, like any bishop, they don't have the professional training like a marriage counselor does. But, you know, I think it's, again, like I said, the spiritual upliftment that you can seek for a marriage to kind of, again, plant the seed of spirituality to kind of strengthen and grow closer as a couple to God.
Yeah. And you're hoping, you know, maybe a restoration of hope there, a little bit of steadying the arc.
Exactly.
And at that point, were you pretty certain that it was headed towards a divorce, or were you, while, you know, thinking maybe this is a saving step that we can take?
It was a saving step you could take. Again, you know, not to get into the nitty gritty details of my divorce, because I don't want to focus on the negatives, but, you know, I think they were necessary steps to work towards a marriage that if you could fix it, you should, you know?
And then as you look back on that, with that interaction with a priesthood leader, and again, our goal isn't to throw one bishop under the bus.
Right. No, that'd be sad.
I have been that bishop who I think, why did I say that to that person?
Like,
right. And I had several instances where, in my head, I'm screaming one thing, but I know in the handbooks it tells me, you know, it's not our job to push towards staying married or divorce. Right.
This
there is sort of a mentor to help them guide and find their own answer and step of action. And so, did you feel like it helped you to process that by meeting with somebody else, or did that lead to further counseling where that
Yeah, I think it led to further counseling. We
like
were
professional
very,
counseling.
Right, yeah. We were very specific with getting an LDS counselor to be able to help us, one, to understand kind of the bigger umbrella of the temple and kind of the covenants we've made, because if you probably have a counselor that's not LDS, you probably won't have that specific focus in mind. But, you know, she was helpful for what she could have helped us with, which ultimately it was better for us both to just part ways.
Yeah. And so it comes a decision through obviously various methods that, you found, that you tried to talk about it, right?
Yes.
You're trying to do that. Do you feel in hindsight you could have, you should have talked about it more? And I don't mean this in the context of you could have saved your marriage if you did this,
but right,
for your personal well-being, did you feel like you talked about it enough that you were able to find those resources?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think anyone wants to live with regret, right? Yeah. I mean, because that will torture you the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was very thoughtful in how I went about my marriage and ultimately my divorce, because, you know, you want to make sure you're making all the necessary steps to make the right decision. And that's, you know, through counseling, through a bishop, through Heavenly Father, kind of having that personal relationship and revelation for what is best. And we made those necessary steps to, you know, communicate on all of those different levels.
Yeah, that's great. And then with this point of, you say, you know, talk about it, the leaders, is this a call to leaders that they need to talk about it more? I mean, as far as openly in their wards, is that part of the encouragement?
Yeah, I mean, I think in reality, many in and out of our faith are struggling and working through a lot of kind of quote unquote non-cookie cutter situation life has thrown at them. And, you know, there's a lot of wonderful ways to be Mormon. And I think a lot of good members of the church are living as single parents or divorced members. And so because that's true, I think a lot of them need resources. You know, we have resources for substance abuse. We have resources for pornography addiction, but we don't have resources for probably more commonplace issues. And I wouldn't maybe say issues as a negative, but it is a trial that many face, which is, you know, single parenting and divorce. And we don't have a lot of resources for them. You know, I don't think a lot of bishops have necessary steps of what does a divorce look like? And how can I explain that to someone who's going through a divorce? You know, what are the necessary steps they need to go through?
And do you feel like, I remember many times as a bishop, individuals that were going through the divorce, they'd come to me and say, well, Bishop, I prayed about it, and I think I'm going to give her the house and do this. And I say, wait a minute, like, don't talk to me about that. Like, you know, don't talk to me about that. Talk to an attorney.
Right.
Like, he's the one that's going to give you the best advice. I'm not going to tell you, you know what, it would be Christ-like for you to give her the house. Like, that's difficult. So, and you're not talking about resources as...
No, not legal, but more so.
Well, what I'm saying is, as far as like marriage counseling, like you're talking about resources after, okay, the decision has been made. The divorce is happening.
Yes.
That ship has sailed and the marriage counseling was, we gave it a good go and everything's there. You're talking about resources of, okay, now I'm entering this world of divorcedom and, and now what? What does my life look like? What's the next step, right?
Yeah.
And, so you're talking about you're entering the world of being divorced and there's just not a lot of resources for somebody's
the healing process.
Yeah.
You know, as I was going through my divorce, again, I was kind of reaching for any type of spiritual upliftment I could have. And Dallin H. Oaks had a wonderful talk about divorce, but a lot of it was focusing on, please don't get divorced. Yeah, you know, if you can, and that is definitely a message that should, but sometimes that's not a reality for a lot of people that are having a little bit more of the serious issues like the church leaders are talking about, which is, you know, abuse or, you know, other serious issues that, you know, in some ways you shouldn't try to work that out.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be a kind of more of a discussion and also resources and inclusion in divorce, knowing that that is a reality in the church and it's something that can be positively talked about. I'm writing a book and I'm going to be publishing it at the end of this month and maybe the first week in April. And I want people to know that regardless of the situations that happen in your life, whether it's divorce or single parenting or other kind of broken home situations, that there's still a place for them in the church. And I hope that there in the future will be kind of more resources and more discussion around those types of things to help people know that, because I've had many friends who have also been divorced in the church. And a lot of the comments that I've had in these discussions, because I'm very passionate about this topic, hence why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
I chose to stay active in the church because I knew that God loved me regardless. And there was a place for me in the church and I could be a resource to other people. But the biggest complaint for a lot of my friends who chose not to stay active was there's no place for me anymore. They didn't know where they fit in. And with there being kind of a lack of resources after you've made the decision that, you know, I need to be on my own again, this is not working, this is not healthy, there needs to kind of be a little bit of a spiritual buffer to help you kind of get through that healing process. Because a lot of it, you're doing it on your own. And, you know, Heavenly Father is there with you every step of the way, which is such a beautiful blessing that I came to find. I think the biggest lesson I learned through my divorce was God loves you.
Yeah.
I never really understood the atonement and how much it really, really kind of covers more than just the holes in life, but it's the holes in your heart as well of, I don't know if I can heal through this. And it was, I wish I could say some extravagant thing to explain the process that I had, but God has a love for you that is beyond anything that could happen to you in this life. And so to create kind of these resources to kind of instill that feeling that there's a place for you, you can be a resource and you can be a positive influence in your wards, in your day-to-day contacts with people in and out of the church, that's powerful. And I'm hoping that that can be something that is created more publicly and discussing the situation of divorce and how you can kind of, you know, heal and kind of integrate back into the church and redefining the relationships that are required, you know, as you're learning what the temple means again, you know, because that could be a sad place after you get divorced. And that's kind of been one of the hardest things for me to kind of understand again. But to kind of have those helpful things to help you understand that God loves you and you're still a very valued member of the church and he's just there waiting for you to reach out.
Yeah. So from a leader's perspective, as that individual enters, you know, the decision been made for, for divorce, what's a leader to do? Because like you said, we're not given that the divorce handbook or there's not a lot of resources that you'll trip over in, you know, a church bookstore.
Right.
So, I mean, how would you articulate or encourage a bishop, and I sort of default to that calling. I'm sure a Relief Society president could
be
involved in this, but what resources can they create or go to really help that person feel the love and feel the hope and stay in the church and realize there's still a place for you here?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. You know, I think a lot of people would say recognition. I think it would be nice for others to have some type of idea of how devastating divorce is and how they can be a helpful tool in the grieving process, but then also the healing process. And I think helping people understand that there is more to being a member of the church than being a traditional LDS families are forever kind of family. I think, you know, creating messages and paying attention to children who are going through a hard divorce and families. I think it's giving spiritual support and giving messages about strength and faith and building testimonies, because I think divorce shakes that. You know, I think a lot of people are like, God, where were you? Or why did this not work out for me?
I checked all the boxes.
Right. You know I had that question when I got divorced. I was like, you know, I waited for the right person to come in my life. He was a good priesthood holder. We got married in the temple. We went to the temple every week together, you know, and yet I ended up in divorce where my friend who got married the same week as me, she has beautiful, three beautiful children and her, you know, marriage is flourishing and mine wasn't. That's hard, you know, and I think being able to be that resource for members to kind of, again, it's just kind of almost redefining the simple things again for them. You know, I for sure had a very inspired bishopric when I went back to a family ward. They actually put me in a calling to be an achievement day leader, which I looked at that and I said, I'm emotionally tired to deal with myself. How the heck am I going to be helping these young girls build up their self-esteem and their self-worth and feel important and to build them? And looking back, it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me because I was able to redefine love in a different way because those girls loved me and I loved them. I was able to be included in a ward family. I was able to give of my love that I so needed and I so wanted to give, but in a way that was impactful for that time in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's just being inspired and recognizing that, you know what do they really need right now? And in my mind, did I really want to go every Tuesday night to go be with the little, you know, 13-year-olds? Probably not at that stage of my life, but what a blessing that was and how inspired that was for that bishopric to like kind of really see she needs to be included. She needs to be implemented into the ward family. She needs to be loved. And I just thought, I mean, that is just one example of a wonderful way a bishop can really integrate someone in a ward family who needs it right after divorce. Yes.
Get them involved.
Get them involved.
Yeah. And you said something I want to go back to. That you said there's a grieving process and a healing process.
Yes.
And I think it's easy to see. Of course, we would expect a grieving process, but we sort of want to get past that quick and get you healed and get you back on your feet. And, you know,
cover it up with a Band-Aid. I'm fine, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But as with any traumatic experience in life, if grieving isn't properly done, that it gets filed away in your brain and sometimes comes back with a rage. So how would you describe that grieving process? Because it's not like you've lost a loved one. I mean, you've lost a loved one, but it's
in a different way. Yeah, they didn't die.
They didn't die, but they're gone, or they're
right
in a different place in your life now. So what was that grieving process like, and how did you effectively get through it?
Yeah. I think divorce is traumatic. I mean, I think a friend once told me once that divorce is probably worse than death. And I think in some ways, I believe this kind of be true, because, you know, surviving a divorce kind of meant surviving kind of horrific and deep and painful emotional wounds that I believe could not be truly understood by those who have also suffered from the same experience. And I felt alone, and I truly wondered if I'd make it out in one piece, you know, because you're grieving, you know, who you used to be. You know, before you got married, you're grieving who you became during this very hard time. Because I know during the end of my marriage, I looked in the mirror and I didn't recognize myself because I was so broken and sad, and I didn't like who I became. And so it's kind of this grieving process. My marriage therapist actually had a really cool experience for me. I'm a very visual and artsy person. And she goes, I want you to make a collage of who you were before, who you were during, and who you want to become. And it was a really impactful project for me, because it helped you kind of look at where you were, you know, who you used to be, who you were, and who you want to become. And, you know, I think, like you said, a lot of people are like, okay, I finally got divorced. I just want to fast forward and move on to my life. And, you know, I think it's good for you to grieve, because you're able to let go of the past, let go of who you used to be, who you want to be, and these kind of expectations, you know, that are kind of a rift between life's reality and your expectations for what your life would be. Because I didn't think I would ever be a divorced person by the age of 23 years old. My life was very different than what I thought it was going to be. And that was a very uncomfortable place to be, because I felt like I failed. I felt like I just was a very unlovable and likable person, which is not true. I feel like I'm a very bubbly and very welcoming person. And I learned throughout my time that I was, you know, someone that I didn't like being. And, you know, grieving really does allow you to let go of the past and, you know, be patient with yourself, because you're going to have highs and lows. You know, as long as you're, you know, you're going to have highs and lows, but as long as you're moving forward, that's what matters. And it's taking that respectful time to feel those things. I think a lot of the times people want to rush feelings, but that doesn't do any good for you. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone has their different pace of healing, and it's not comparing yourself to your ex-spouse saying, well, they got remarried after 6 months or whatever have you. You know, it's focusing on you and making the times and relearning yourself and learning what you kind of want to build for yourself. It's kind of like, you know, here we are, we're in spring and it's spring cleaning. Like you get to kind of rebuild the home and the person that you want to be. And that's a time consuming process. And, you know, there's still things, I think a couple years down the road, you're still kind of going to be working on some things. Yeah. But I think as you're progressing through recognizing feelings, recognizing why you're angry, why you're sad, why you're disappointed, and journaling was huge for me. That, and this ultimately inspired my book, was journaling kind of these feelings of learning who I was, who I wanted to become, and redefining a lot of these spiritual relationships that I had with the temple and with God and my church community and all of these different things. Like being reflective and thoughtful in those processes and saying, it's okay that I feel this way. I'm not going to feel this way forever. That's empowering. That's really impactful.
Yeah. And the way you articulate that, it's a very vulnerable state spiritually where, and I see this in different contexts, where I saw it as a bishop when somebody's going through a repentance process, right? Where they just are torn down and humbled. And now, like you mentioned, spring cleaning, they're at this new state where they can start over through the atonement. And the atonement is just as applicable in this case with, you know, a grieving and some traumatic times, but you get that opportunity to compartmentalize yourself again and say, all right, I'm moving forward. I've grieved. I've put these things away. And the other thing I wanted, that I heard in that explanation is that it sounded like the therapy didn't end once you decide, okay, we're getting divorced. Therapy was a good try, but now let's get the paperwork done and move on. did counseling and therapy?
Yeah, you know, I think like anyone going through divorce, you're going to have emotional scars from, you know, what has happened and who you became and some of the things you don't like about yourself through this process that kind of became ingrained with you. I went to therapy a couple of months after I got divorced, just so I felt like I was in a good place where I can constructively work on who I wanted to be. Because sometimes you have so many feelings and so many things you're having to deal with because you're having to do things financially on your own again. You're having to like figure out where you're going to live. And there's just, in this, I mean, I was lucky because, you know, I got divorced and I didn't have children. And that adds another complex thing.
That's
that
a
lot of
interview.
It is, you know, and I can't speak to that personally, but I know how complex that must be. And that adds a whole new dynamic that really needs to be sensitive and talked about as well. But it was helpful for me to kind of, again, take the necessary steps to invest in myself. And like you said, I'm a Harry Potter nerd. And okay. J.K. Rowling once said, she goes, rock bottom was the foundation in which I was able to rebuild my life. Mm-hmm. And God can, from rock bottom, God can really help you, you know, see, you know, who and what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, and throughout this experience, I could have taken this as a complete negative. I could have made a lot of excuses. Well, God must not be real. And, mm-hmm. you know, this didn't work out for me. So this must be a bunch of hoopla, mm-hmm. you know, but you know, I took this experience and I think God had a different plan for my life because I was able to look at the things that I learned, which was I knew what it was like to be utterly alone. I knew what it was like to feel completely worthless. But through these experiences, I learned a powerful empathy for people. I learned God's love for people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to use these experiences for positivity, to remind people that God loves them. There's a place for you. And you know, you can be a powerful tool as well. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of whys that are not answered by God. And I think a lot of people get very hung up on why did this happen to me? Mm-hmm. You know, they're not constructive questions in situations like divorce, because I find that it's not why, but what happened to me.
Yeah.
And it's that constructive what, and therefore what can I do to be better? And how can I make the world better through that experience?
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so important for you to mention that, you know, therapy continued yeah. months after, because I'm just thinking, Bishop's listening to this and thinking, so now I have to collage with somebody in my
no.
office? You know,
right?
That's not what you're saying.
No,
what,
no, no.
But what you're saying is that grieving has to take place.
Yep.
And a lot of that, a professional therapist can help
yes.
that process.
Yep.
The bishop doesn't have to figure out
no,
okay,
no, no.
what we got to do now.
What's a creative way I can help
yeah.
you through this? No.
Are you done grieving yet? How about now? And now, right?
What's the timeline?
But to encourage that therapy and counseling
right.
after, so that that process can happen
yeah.
rather than just saying, okay, well, let's act like that didn't happen and get you back in the ward and we'll give you a calling, right? And,
no,
and don't even address it.
You know, and bishops can be a powerful part of that healing process as well. You know, on top of therapy, as I've talked about a lot, bishops can also be that spiritual discussion that you need to have that's
yeah.
a safe place. You know, I had a couple of bishops, especially when I went back to the YSA, which, let me tell you, scary, scary, because
we'll,
I just, yeah, we'll get there. But, you know, I had a bishop there that was so understanding, and he looked at a lot of the things that I was struggling with post-divorce. And we had a lot of meaningful discussions about redefining my relationship, and to have a priesthood holder kind of take the time to talk with me and not make me feel stupid for some of the feelings that I developed or some of the concerns or even the scary things that I was like, am I ever going to get married again? Am I, you know, am I normal? And, you know, am I going to be okay? He was able to be that very comforting resource, as well as, you know, my loving family and like a great support system I had with friends and either, you know, and other divorce members that I had as resources as well. I mean, bishops can really play a pivotal role in helping rebuild that spiritual testimony and strength mm-hmm. that is needed for divorce members. Yeah.
And I think that's where that focus could be for those interactions, you know, in
right.
the bishop's office. It's not necessarily, you're not worrying about the grieving, the legal aspects, all this. I mean, you may ask questions related to that, but
yeah.
but it goes back to, well, you know, how's your relationship with your Father in heaven?
Yeah, it's the simple questions. How are you doing? How's
yeah.
your testimony doing?
Yeah.
You know?
And what helps? What's not helping?
Yeah.
You know, will this calling work for you? Let's give it a try and
yeah.
talk about it, right? And so you're sort of trying to establish a foundation spiritually and
mm-hmm.
and guide them along
yep.
as they figure out their new life in the world of
because you need
divorce,
it
of being single again,
yeah,
right?
Which is a whole new
yeah.
issue.
Right, exactly. And so you talk about anything else as far as resources go, the needs of that transition that we haven't mentioned yet, or
no, I think
that
that's good.
Again.
Yeah,
you also mentioned inclusion. Like, how would you articulate that? This third point of creating inclusion, or or including the individual who's been divorced?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would love to see more resources, portrayals, inclusions of these type of trials that are, you know, typical to a lot of good members of the church. Uh-huh. You know, I think I've seen a lot of really great articles lately from LDS Living that are talking about divorce, like what LDS divorce members wish you knew or things that you should know about LDS divorce. And they've actually done a lot of surveys lately talking about LDS divorce, which, like, some of the top reasons why people get divorced. And ultimately, a lot of the survey pointed towards divorce does affect church activity. And that doesn't necessarily mean that people stop going, because actually the survey said that people continue to go, but the relationship with the church and their activity in the church does change. And that's why, to me, resources need to be in place for people that are in a divorce or single parenting, because sometimes you don't get divorced and sometimes the man, you know, or the woman disappear. And I think because church activity does change and those relationships do have to be redefined, I think resources and that the examples of divorce would be really powerful, because I think a lot of the times you look at a lot of church materials and they're the happy family, the cookie cutter epitome of what we should all aspire to. But sometimes that's not the reality. As much as we, you know, live righteously, that sometimes doesn't happen. And although I wish that upon everyone, and I believe that marriage is a beautiful thing that everyone should have the blessing of, I think, you know, not being the doom and gloom divorce word, I think kind of creating this new idea that divorce is a reality. Divorce is something that happens, although we wish that it would not, it does happen. And this is, you know, and it's okay that it sometimes happens in some situations because it's better for the situation. But kind of including those kind of examples in your talks or in mentions in your talks with, you know, firesides or talks generally, I think would be very impactful.
Yeah. I mean, talk about divorce being the D word, and it kind of
the dirty D word.
Right, it also reminds me of the other D word, which is doubt. And that, because I love Professor Michael Goodman's talked about this concept of doubt, you know, which is another issue in the church that is talked about a lot, that it's an amoral word, right? Yeah. And I think divorce is the same way, that sometimes when somebody starts to doubt, we feel like, oh, there's been a loss there or something's gone wrong because you're doubting. And so we look at divorce that way, like, okay, something's gone wrong. That wasn't supposed to happen. And we know it's not supposed to happen, but there's so much richness that can come out of that experience, right? And like you said, normalizing it to be that this is something that does happen rather than this is something that
you don't want to promote, but it's norm. Exactly. You know, it does
just
happen.
Like, we wouldn't want to necessarily promote doubt, but we want to promote, like, asking questions and seeking deeper understanding.
The church started with a question, right? Exactly. You know, so it's healthy. I think when it comes to doubt, especially with divorce, I think it's, you have to look at the reason why you're doubting, right? Yeah. Are you having questions to prove something wrong? Mm-hmm. Are you having questions to genuinely understand things better? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like you said, you know, faith and doubt cannot exist, but, you know, doubt can help you learn. Yeah. And, you know, there were many times where I was like, God, I'm struggling right now. You know, you're not answering my prayers. Like, things aren't going right. So what's happening? You know, and I was doubting sometimes. And I wish that my faith, I wish I was perfect. I wish I was, you know, yep, everything's going to be great. And I'm just going to live right all the time. You know, there were days I struggled, but, you know, like you said, you know, doubt is a wonderful teacher if it's in the correct spirit.
Yeah. And divorce has been a wonderful teacher in that right spirit, right?
It has. Mm-hmm.
And you talk about, as far as resources, how did you put it? Just with inclusion, like, what does that look like? Like, what's the practical aspect of that for a leader? Like, how do they make that come to be? Is it mainly just giving you a calling, or what does that look like? Or what suggestions would you give for a leader?
You know, I think, like I talked about before, inclusion is important. Helping them feel like this happened to you, but you're still a part of our ward family. You're still a part of our stake family. I think that's powerful. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, having firesides around topics like that, maybe people won't feel as comfortable, but the fact that you're willing to talk about those things in a constructive and spiritual way, I think that would be really impactful. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, again, having mentions in, you know, your talks or in your testimonies, I think, again, you know, there's been policy changes around divorce as well. And there's a lot of positive things that I think that are and will be implemented in the future that can really be helpful to, again, re kind of affirm that this happened, but God still loves you. And there's very much a place for you in the church. And there's no reason for you to feel like the outsider. And this is a weird and awkward place to be anymore.
Yeah. So have you had opportunity, like in a sacrament meeting, to talk about your experience? I mean, or anything like that? Or
yeah, I mean, again, I'm not one to focus on the negativity. You know, so a lot of the times, you know, in my talks or in my lessons, I have the best calling in the world, which is a Relief Society teacher.
Nice. Very
good. I love it. I was able to, again, kind of use my experience as a way to be empathetic and kind to other people. You know, I will most likely explain it as, you know, I had a very, very hard time in my life where I felt X, Y, and Z, and I learned X, Y, and Z in return. And, you know, and there have been times, especially like I remember one of the first lessons I had as a YSA Relief Society teacher was about temple marriage. And I'm oh goodness. But you know, I was able to use my experience as a very thoughtful way to help people prepare for marriage, but then also as a way to kind of really see how beautiful marriage can be as the ideal. And, you know, as a couple, which is supposed, you know, as it's upheld in the family declaration.
Proclamation,
the family proclamation. There's a beautiful partnership that can be made. And so I don't focus on the negativity. I don't see my divorce as an awful and treacherous thing. Yeah. You know, again, like I've said before in this podcast, it was some of the best and worst times of my life, but I came out a stronger person that understands who God is to me. And it was a beautiful way for me to see his hand in the tender mercies throughout that whole process, that he was there and he listened. And although it wasn't giving me all the answers I wanted, and it wasn't ultimately the results that I wanted, he was there, and he was there to make the future better, better than I originally would have thought it would have been.
Yeah. So what's your journey look like since then? Did you go back to a YSA ward?
So, you know, I was in my parents' family ward for a little while, and that's where I had that wonderful experience of being a activities day leader. Cool. So that was wonderful. And then eventually I said, all right, let's get it back up on the horse and we'll go to the YSA ward, which as a divorce member, you actually have to wait to go to a YSA ward till everything's finalized. So, you know, family ward was where I needed to reside, which was a hard transition as well, because you so wanted to move forward with your life, but proper things and proper procedure, which I understand. So I went back to a YSA ward, and, you know, you slowly got back into the dating world and you made new friends. And, you know, I remember I was terrified to go back to the YSA ward because I was like, oh no, people are going to find out like who I am and what I've been through, and they're going to judge me. And I've actually come to find that because divorce is a lot more commonplace, which is, you know, again, a kind of the sad reality that I really hope that we can address, there was a lot of comfort because I was able to, one, help people who had also been through a divorce. And we were able to kind of connect and understand each other a little bit more. And we were a comfort to each other, knowing that, you know, it's okay, I'm not alone. And so it's been a really positive experience. You know, I've been very active in my wards. I've been really great with visiting, teaching, and understanding that, you know, in my marriage, I felt very neglected and I was very alone. And that has helped me become a better ward member because I understand what it's like to be not reached out to and not loved. And that's helped me with my visiting, teaching efforts. That's helped me in my speaking efforts and really hoping that I can help others kind of come under Christ that way.
So what would you say to a YSA bishop, how you know, someone who's been divorced in their ward, how can they encourage them?
Yeah, again, I think don't sit back. You know, the church is not a place for you to kind of expect to be fed, right? You don't go to just be fed and to be given things. You also have to be giving as well. And to not be afraid of, because your experience is different, that you don't have a voice and that you don't have an important role to play. I think any YSA bishop, like any other bishop, you know, integration is important, and to have those touch points saying, you know, have you been to the temple lately? How is that relationship going? You know, and asking those thoughtful questions, not in a tell me about your life story and like really kind of let's get down to the nitty gritty, but in a constructive way saying, you know, I know where you've been. I know it's been hard. So where can we go together to kind of get to a better place spiritually? How can I be a resource to you to understand something better or to heal something better, you know, and letting them kind of come to you and talk about, you know, this is kind of what I'm struggling with. Like, what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, not, you know, you will feel embarrassed. You will feel guilt, but you should never really feel shame throughout this experience. And I think helping kind of the that feeling of shame disappear for that divorce member, because I think you feel a lot of things and you worry about like what other people will think about you and what the church thinks about you and what God will think about. And to kind of eliminate that feeling of shame when coming back to church and coming back to kind of reapply a lot of the things that you've grown up feeling, you know, and they were positive before you got divorced and they might be shaken up a little bit right now. I think it's, you know, to help them grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does it, what's the dynamic like with dating after in a YSA ward in that culture where, you know, 99% of the attendees are probably have not been married before? Does it come up on the first date? Do you bring it up? Or how do you navigate that?
It's been an interesting one to navigate. For a long time, I didn't think I wanted to get married again. You know, that was something I really struggled with. And, you know, I struggled to believe love existed. And, you know, I think that's a normal thing to go through. But I've dated some really, really inspiring people that have taught me a lot, both through negative and positive experiences we've had in those relationships. And I think it's to cling on to that hope that, you know, you have to think about what are the promises God has made to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you stop to think about that, I think we are all promised to have that type of joy and, you know, to not stress about, oh, like, do I need to get married right away? Just be happy having those experiences and in the right time, not putting the pressure of I need to get remarried. Or it's been nice to be able to have people that have taken the time to kind of help me grow as an individual. But, you know, it is kind of when do I tell them I'm divorced or do I need to tell them if, you know, because it actually has been a deal breaker for some individuals I have dated. And, you know, I understand that everyone has their different expectations and they're entitled to those things. And, you know, I respect them as I hope they would respect me and my experiences. And so, you know, that person wasn't for me and that's okay. And I think, you know, that goes back to, you know, the church is perfect and the people sometimes aren't, you know, and sometimes you will be offended. And sometimes people will say really dumb stuff that you just wish that was really insensitive. I really wish you said that differently, but understanding that, you know, people might not understand your whole experience and not holding them against that because they don't know. They don't know what you've been through. They don't know what you've had to grow through. And so being patient with other people and with yourself, I think is really important when it comes to dating and just keeping an open mind. Cause it's kind of like you get to hit the restart button and say, okay, you know what? One of my really great friends said, you need to create a list of non-negotiables of things that you know, throughout this experience, you do not want to give up on, you know, whether that's different personal qualities and not really focusing on, you know, obviously the outward appearance because that fades with time, but like really meaningful things that, you know, you need to stick to your guns on the next time around and really understanding, you know, what did I learn through this experience and what do I need? Mm-hmm. You know, it's not what do I want, it's what do I really need? And throughout this experience, like I've really learned what I've needed and therefore, you know, some guys had those things and some did not. And, you know, I respectfully, you know, moved on for the ones that didn't, but you know, all wonderful people. And it's been a really interesting experience kind of navigating and learning, you know, I'd rather be upfront about, you know, this is where I've been and I hope that you can be understanding. And if it's not, then it's okay. You know, and I respect that.
I think that's a sound advice for anybody striving to develop themselves as an individual, right? You have create a list of non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. These are some targets and things in life that absolutely need to be there, right? So what's the title of your book and what do you hope it accomplishes? What's the purpose behind it?
Yeah. So the book is called When Eternity Is Not Forever, because my eternity was not forever. And so I thought that was a kind of a catchy title. And it's a self-help kind of devotional book that has a short spiritual thought that someone can read in the morning to kind of help them get through the day. And these actually started off as journal entries that I wrote and I was putting them up on a blog and someone was like, these are great. So I was like, I might make it a book. And so it's a self-help book that I hope can help people work through to one, help them with the healing process, but to also kind of help them redefine their relationship in the church in a very positive way and reminding them that, you know, there's a place for you and you can be a very loved and crucial part of God's kingdom and God's family. And you are very much loved. And I want people to know that. And I'm hoping that this book is a resource for people that need that spiritual upliftment as they needed through the healing process and to help them kind of come to understand themselves with God and with the temple and with a lot of the other issues that are going to be things that you need to work through in divorce. And so I, you know, it took 2 years to write this, and I've really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, I have an Instagram page that I've launched to kind of put the feelers out there. And, you know, I have a pretty great following of people that are really excited about the book. And it's been a helpful resource. I get emails weekly from people saying, when can I buy this book? This is something that I've needed. And I'm so grateful that you're being so real and open about your experience, and not a negative way saying, oh, a divorce is the worst, but you were able to grow from this, and there's hope and there's happiness after this. And that inspires me to do this at the end of the day. And I'm hoping that it's a resource that I needed when I went through my divorce. And I don't want anyone to feel like they didn't have that help or support that I felt like I didn't necessarily get throughout my divorce.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And so I'm sure it'll be available on Amazon and
Amazon and Kindle.
Nice. Yeah. Perfect place to, that's where I read my books. So that's fantastic. And so I'll put all the links there on in the show notes for individuals
to check it out
and discover it, and your Instagram, and if people want to follow you more and see how your life progresses, because you're still working on that eternal marriage, right?
Yeah, I'm dating someone really great right now. Oh, so good. Fingers crossed, right? Yeah.
Wow. Not too fast.
No, okay, no.
I'm just like, I know. Well, cool. This has been fantastic.
And, no, thank
and I
you
appreciate
for having
you,
me.
Be willing to be vulnerable and talk about this difficult part of your life, but that has been a growing one. So the final question I have, as you've gone through your divorce, how has that made you a better disciple or follower of Jesus Christ?
It has helped me become a empathetic person that understands God's love for each one of his children. And I think it has helped me to understand that, you know, life is not going to be perfect, but God's love is. And at the end of the day, no matter what you go through, no matter what is done to you, no matter the things that life will throw at you, God's love is never changing. And he is a person that is in control. He understands the things that are in store for you. And it has been a trial of faith, but it has been a powerful lesson for me to understand that patience is not just waiting for good things to happen. It's really kind of doing everything that you can to add to your future and add to your life, and knowing that I don't have to stress and God will take care of it. And through that, you know, it's learning not to be selfish in trials and understanding that there are many people that need just as much love as you do. And so if you're hurting, you know, love other people and be that hand for God. I've really come to find that with God, all things are possible, and the atonement is very real. And it's something that is unexplainable. And it's a powerful thing that can help you understand yourself, your life, the things that lack and the things that are. And that's a powerful constant that you can have no matter what happens. And you can be that strong source of love and understanding and a positive example to other people, knowing that, you know, you went through it, I can too. And taking that positive, or I mean, let's get real, divorce is not positive all the time, but taking that negative experience and making it a positive for other people to learn and to not feel alone and be empathetic.
That concludes my interview with Sydney Hatch. Be sure to check her website out at WhenEternityIsNotForever.com. There you can find information about her book. Definitely, she's a good follow on Twitter as well, so definitely check her out there. But I applaud her for what she's doing and the people she's reaching out to. If there's anybody else that can maybe bring a strong perspective, a unique perspective, or professional perspective to this subject of divorce, I'd love to get in contact with you and see if we can create other content, but whether they're podcast episodes or articles around the topic of divorce, especially in the LDS context. And don't forget about that email from Nelma Lima all the way over in Angola. Bless your heart, Nelma. I hope you're listening, but let's contribute so we can help more leaders like that maybe are across the world and don't have access to resources and funds to find the best leadership content. We want to take it to them. And don't forget, visit leadinglds.org/teach to check out the 3 most viewed sessions from the recent Teaching Saints Virtual Summit. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.